Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the podcast panel show that wants to do the right thing in any situation. For example, what is the best way to treat a stab wound? The answer is with the utmost seriousness. You're bleeding, for fuck's sake! I'm Danielle Ward, and with me trying to do the right thing today, on my right, if anyone knew who he was, he'd be on Grumpy Old Men. It's Michael Legg! And with him, if anyone still cared who he was, he'd be on Grumpy Old Men. It's Robin Ince! She's like David Jason, ironed out. It's Margaret Cable. And with her, a woman who is as long as she is Josie. It's Josie Long. It's time for the first round, The Importance of Being Right.
The Importance of Being Right.
The World Wide Web can provide you with answers to any question, almost as fast as it can proliferate hatred. So according to Wing Commander Internet, what is the right thing to do in the following scenarios? Margaret and Josie, this one is for you. You've both been invited to a swanky party. It's black tie, so Margaret gets her knees out and Josie puts on her best homemade T-shirt.
You can all go fuck yourselves. Sometimes people tweet me and they say, I like that T-shirt you were wearing, where did you get it? So,
actually, that's sarcasm.
Should we get back to the scenario?
Sure. I'm wearing a T-shirt and the T-shirt says, I love kittens. And then I've got Play-Doh, just in case I meet someone I want to make a Play-Doh heart for.
There is a free bar and you both make the most of it, collapsing into a drunken spoon with each other. But while you're sleeping, some evil bastard flies you to an uninhabited island. You both wake with a colossal hangover and a ripe thirst on, but according to the Worst Case Survival Handbook, what is the right way to find water on a deserted island?
Hang on, so the whole black tie thing was irrelevant.
Yeah, you haven't heard the show, have you?
Listen to every single one and I really like it and I'm not even exaggerating.
So how do you find drinking water on a deserted island?
There's an island. See if there are any bottles of water.
or a shop. Yeah. No, actually, I know the answer to this one, I think. Oh, no, I don't know. It depends whether Josie's brought any plastic bags to this swanky-do. Have you?
Of course I have.
OK. I think you put it on the ground and put a stone on it until it sweats. Is that correct?
That might be correct.
Do you know what I might do is, like, look to see if there's any, like, waterfalls.
Yeah. No. You're quite right. I think Josie at the end there has got, what I'd use is my eyes and my ears. I'd look around the island to perhaps see where things were growing, and that would suggest there was some water there before I went, have I got any fucking plastic bags and a stone? Oh, hang on, I think I left them near that river. Hang on, I'll be back in a minute. Scenario build-up, there's a lot of flaws in these narratives.
Michael, if you had to be on an island with one of these three, who would you pick?
Robin, definitely. There's nothing I would like more than to see Robin stranded on an island. And the very thought that I couldn't be there to see it would break my heart.
Even if it meant you were also stranded.
I don't care about
it's
that.
Really that's cutting your nose
off. Yeah, that's insignificant. And the very fact that finally, after months of starvation, dying of thirst, he'd probably find a wild boar and kill it and cook it. I would just annoy him by going, "But you know I'm vegan, Robin." That would upset him for a long time.
I'll just go back to eating sand.
As long as he's angry, I'm happy and alive. It's what keeps me alive. Do you know what? I've just realised, if I could choose... No offence, Robin, I love you to pieces, but if I'd choose anything, it would have to be Margaret, really. Because when Margaret and I first met... Because if you're on a desert island, I mean, you're going to die there, aren't you? You're going to die. And I did tell Margaret when we first met that one day I would kill her.
This is true. It was almost the first thing you said to me. Genuinely.
Hang on, when was that? Because that's about the first thing I ever said to Margaret.
Would you rather be by yourself or with any other person?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Even Daz Sampson. Who is... does anyone remember Daz Sampson? He was the one that did that creepy song for the Eurovision, which was about playgrounds a few years ago. And is the winner of every annual competition of the worst threesome we can think of between me and my friends. So, yeah.
Who holds that competition?
It's a national thing. Don't invite you. You're on the list.
Do you know what? I feel no moment of going, oh, because just the fact that, therefore, you've imagined...
You're right, you win,
and
you
anger
win.
That would have created for you. And now the fact that people listening may be imagining it as well, this awful me with a guy... Sorry, you sang what in the Eurovision? Oh, hang on a minute. I'll take this glove off. And, you fell into a trap there of your own making, didn't you? As if you wanted to, from a Freudian analysis.
Ben, what does your thing say?
Good. It gets more and more like QI all the time.
Try to keep it
what
loose.
What is the thing?
Well, it gives 7 techniques. Ooh. Collect rainwater in a container. A helmet will work, it says. Collect dew. Tie rags around your ankles and walk in grass or foliage at sunrise. The dew will gather on the material. Number 3, if the island has a green interior, this is an indication of fresh water streams. I think Robin and Josie get a point for this.
Yes!
Number 4, catch fish. The area around a fish's eyes contains drinkable liquid. Oh. Fish flesh contains drinkable water. Squeeze raw fish through clothing to extract it.
Oh. And your best clothing, because you've been at that black tie do as well. Yes. That's a debate.
Well, Michael and Robin, here is your scenario. It's your birthday. Congratulations.
Nice. Closer to the grave.
But no one has remembered. You're feeling very sorry for yourself when you hear a little mew in your kitchen. It's your cat. You know your cat won't let you down, not on this special day. What's he got you? A wee fit? A voucher for a meal at Gordon Ramsay's restaurant? No, the stupid prick has bought you a collection of dead mice and birds. Again. But according to the ASPCA website, what is the right way to stop your cat bringing you dead things?
You just going, I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
I'm a vegan. Oh, come on, I'm a vegan.
Bad Robin. Naughty Robin. I call my cat Robin.
Do either of you have cats?
I had a cat.
Oh, God, here we go. The story.
What happened to it?
I don't know.
You know when you're about to become a vegan, you think, what shall I have for my last meal?
You say, what happened to your cat? And you said, well, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I was young. It just went away. I'm a dog person. Thing is, my dog has brought a cat into the house.
Really?
Yeah,
he killed the cat.
Well, that's sexist, Josie. My dog's a she. You should really give women more credit.
Their ability to be animals.
I had a cat when I was younger. And its name was Casper the Friendly Ghost Cat. So we let my brother name it, and we had 2 fish called Fireman Sam and Fireman Sam. And also we had a dog called Bonnie Tyler Ward that my dad had named.
My daughter was asked to provide some suggestions for names for her new cousin, and she came up with Milat and Slacho. They sound quite cool.
What's your daughter's invisible friend called?
She's got 3. They're called Kerry, Mince and Crit. Got a problem with that?
Crit?
Crit. He's 25. I don't know why he's hanging around with a 3-year-old.
Michael and Robin, would you put anything on the cat's collar?
No. I would place the cat in a box. With a small... Yeah, there we go. do a lot of science broadcasting. I had to bring that up at some point. Yes, I would imagine a little ding-a-linging bell that would mean that the mice or birds would be warned away before the cat arrived to them.
Oh, very clever. Ben, what are the actual answers?
Collar bells are largely ineffectual. Instead, the website, the ASPCA website, says the most effective way is to keep the cat inside your house.
I once killed a mouse by chasing it round with a bottle of fairy liquid and squeezing it in its eyes. No? Look, everybody kills mice, yeah?
No. Well, you've got your main trap where I, you know, yeah.
What about fly paper? People use that, right?
No, she made fly traps.
You've honestly just reminded me what happened just 2 days ago. My dog found, well, let's face it, a human shit. It was, someone had shit, and it was a proper big Mr. Whippy big shit. And what was worse than catching my dog eating it? It's worse. No, it's worse than that. It's worse. It was licking it. No. This is refreshing. It's fucking horrible. And I got so angry at the dog being that disgusting that I got a wet one sort of thing out of my dog pouch. I know. Yeah, I've got a dog pouch. So what? Can't all be young and trendy like you. With your high heels and flares. Is that what they wear still? I don't know. Right? And I got the wet one, and what? Because it had human shit right in its mouth.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And then I was so angry, I actually got hand gel and cleaned my dog's tongue with hand gel. I can tell by her face, she will never do that again.
You could have just punished the dog by not giving it those lovely kisses you normally do.
No kisses for me!
No, you've got a shitty mouth. Ooh, I love Michael's tongue kisses.
Why should I lose out because of her mistake?
I think you feared enjoying the taste.
Hey, Ben, who got the points at that?
Michael and Robert got one, and Margaret and Josie got one.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Round is agony, where we read out printed letters to actual agony aunts sent into magazines by real copy editors, and then see if the team's advice matches. Margaret's been given a real letter to an agony aunt that appeared in a national newspaper. Would you like to read it out for
us? Dear agony aunt, my boyfriend gets turned on by bin liners. He likes us to dress up in them, to sleep in them, and have sex in them. He also wets the bed. He's a bodybuilder, and if you saw him, you'd know he's not weird, except for the bin liner fetish. Plus, his problem with wetting the bed. I've asked him why he dressed in bin liners, and he says they just make him feel good. Is that something to do with wetting the bed? I love the guy. Will he ever get over the bin liner thing?
Josie, you're a lady.
I am.
Would a man...
You like dressing up.
Right.
If you started a relationship with a gentleman who liked bin bags, would that put you off?
Do you know, I keep thinking about all these lovely men that I've dumped. I'm thinking, maybe I was a bit harsh. Like, none of them did anything approaching anything that fucked up. Like, honestly, if I was with someone... Okay, after 30 years together, fine, you're bored of each other, do anything to surprise me, right? But I think my advice would be to leave him.
Really?
Or to get him to go to therapy, because come
on. I'm sort of the opposite. This is the tip of the iceberg to me. This is just normal, isn't it?
I think it's fine. Fair enough.
I think it's a good idea, because if you did kill him, because you just got sick of it, and then put him in a bin liner, just there you go, it's what he would have wanted.
be all right.
Bin liner is only sort of 3 foot long. Mm-hmm. So if you're in together, both in a bin liner, that's only going to go up mid-thigh. And then if you put an... I suppose that's 6... OK, fine. Logistically, it works out.
Do you know... So, hang on. So you were... Do you know what? I had totally the wrong image. I had him dressed in bin liners.
Yeah, that's what I
thought. How would you dress in a bin liner?
The two of them getting in the bin liner.
Like a little sleeping bag, I thought.
I think it's like cats in a bag.
Oh. Oh, that is weird, actually.
Also, what I like is the person writing in obviously doesn't want to have to write two different advice letters. So they've gone like the bin liner thing. Also, where's the bed? Could you do that one as well? I don't have 2 stamps. Just to get that, where's the bed? Also, could you tell me where the nearest Greek restaurant is? It's a borough. Thanks.
Producer Ben, what advice did Dear Deirdre in the Sun give?
It's Dear Deirdre?
Yeah.
Those ones are made up, you fools.
The bin liner thing may be hard to change. The roots of a fetish can go deep, she says. If he wet the bed as a child, it's likely he associates the feel of plastic with security, comfort and love. This fetish is harmless, but be careful. No plastic gets around your face at night. And I'm sending you my leaflet, Fetish Worries. I think Margaret got closest.
Because she's a very sympathetic woman.
Thanks.
I think we have people in the audience who want your advice.
I doubt it.
No, they really do. Is Richard W, a.k.a. Dick, here? Hello.
I'd love it if we just heard a rustling sound and... no, thank you, actually, the last letter covered me.
There he is. Can we get the microphone to him? So his problem is, when I was a child, my parents had my foreskin cut off and I would like it back. What should I do?
It may well actually be one of the rings of Saturn, because that is the truth. The,
Brian Cox tell you this?
No. That's why he's always pointing. It's that one. That's wonderful as well. Apparently the Vatican used to have some balmy old ideas years ago, and they used to say that they believe that Jesus's foreskin actually formed one of the rings of Saturn. So I'm saying yours probably won't be one of the big outer rings. It'll be far, but it's not going to be as big as like Jesus's ring around Saturn, but that could well be where it would be. So all you need to do is build a spaceship. That's genuine. I haven't made up. The Catholic fucking church made it up. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that bit is... Yeah.
Daniel, so the Catholic Church has officially said Jesus has a massive cock.
Some cock.
If you had to have sex religious figure who's possibly mythical, which one would you have sex with?
The elephant with your arms.
Say that along with both of you, because that would have been the best moment for Don. Ganesh, his name is. Yeah.
Oh, him. Hasn't he got the head of an elephant, though?
Yeah. That's even better.
I just want to say, if you want, I'll knit you a foreskin.
Thank you, that's a very kind offer, thank you.
It's my pleasure.
I think Josie Long gets those points. And applause for Josie.
Hello, this is producer Ben, interrupting the show to explain that you're about to hear an advert. Take it away, Michael Legg.
Hey, Do the Right Thing is coming to the Edinburgh Festival. We're doing 4 gigs between the 8th and 14th of August. Guests will include Richard Herring, Bridget Christie, Susan Coleman, and Adolf Hitler. I know. All lineups are subject to change, and Hitler is dead, so he might not be able to make it. For tickets and more information, go to the internet!
And if you want to go somewhere specific on the internet, I'd suggest comedy.co.uk/PFS-DTRT.
Now it's time for Ask the Expert! John Ronson! So, John, you are an expert in psychopaths, and you wrote a book about them.
I did.
How long have you loved psychopaths?
I love them. Spent 2.5 years with psychopaths.
Loving them.
Well, I wouldn't say loving them. I'd say sort of being wary around them. trying to stop them from getting inside my head and screwing with me, which, in fact, I failed to do. They got inside my head and screwed with me.
Really?
Yeah.
If you were a psychopath, what would be your method of killing?
Oh, gosh, well, most psychopaths don't kill. So if anyone's in the Venn diagram of psychopaths and killers, it's quite slim.
I'm just asking, would you eat them or put them in a bag? That's
But no, but most psychopaths, because, you know, as capitalism rewards psychopathic behaviour, as history has shown, most psychopaths just do great in business.
So it's a good thing?
No, it's not a good thing. It's a good thing if you are a psychopath, you tend to make quite a lot of money, as long as you don't go down the killie route.
As long as you don't do the killing stuff.
Yeah.
Well, panel, I'm going to give you 1 minute to question John and get to know him a little bit better, and then we'll put some scenarios to him, and you have to guess what you think he thinks the right thing to do is. So, Josie Long, would you like to start?
I just want to ask you about different psychopaths you've met. Like, did you have ones that you stayed in touch with afterwards who, like, weirded you out and then you thought they were your friend and that you'd crack them because you were the best one and then actually they'd crack you?
Well, I sort of like all of them in a way, but that's...
So, yeah, if you were on a desert island but you were only allowed 8 psychopaths, who would they
be? Who's my favourite psychopath?
We've all got a favourite.
Yeah, no, I do have a favourite of my psychopath chums, and it's a man called Tony, who faked madness. When he was 17, he beat somebody up in Reading Town Centre, and he was on remand, and his cellmate said, you know what you have to do? Fake madness. Tell him you're mad, you'll get sent to some cushy hospital. Nurses will bring you pizzas, you have your own PlayStation. So he faked madness, but he faked it a bit too well. And they didn't send him to some cushy hospital, sent him to Broadmoor, because they determined that only a psychopath would fake madness to get out of a prison sentence. So he would have done 5 years for GBH, and he ended up doing 14 years in Broadmoor.
Just because he put 2 pencils up his nose, his underpants on his head, and went whipping.
Well,
that's incredible.
Well, one of the ways he faked madness, he told the prison psychiatrist at Reading Prison that he wanted to watch women as they died because it would make him feel more normal. So I said to him, where'd you get that from? He said, oh, a biography of Ted Bundy that they had in the prison library.
But was he a psychopath? So Bundy, was he a psychopath? Again, in terms of the actual definition,
that
he would be defined as a psychopath, and his one was just particularly about,
Yeah, he's one of the killy ones.
Yeah. If I came up to you and went, no, I'm the real John Lunton. You're not
you're
John Lunton.
You're the second podcast.
Would you... Well, that's not a psychopathy, though, is it? What is that, a psychopathy? What's
I see. OK, yeah. No, I thought the imitating of me in a grotesque way.
No. I thought you were doing Brian Cox.
Yeah, it was very similar to Brian Cox.
When we had you and Brian on,
Pete Shelley.
We actually ended up being told that people couldn't tell the difference.
Is that
so
really?
It was a real problem.
Is that why I've never been invited onto
Mysteries of the Universe? Tell us more about Planck's Constant. I can't. That's not really my area. And that was... So that was... So if that kind of thing, then that's not the behaviour of a psychopath to think there was someone else, then.
Psychopathy is not a delusional condition. They don't hallucinate or have delusions. It's a moral deficiency. It's a lack of empathy. And all the things that go along with a lack of empathy, like, for instance, a lack of remorse and a grandiosity and a cunning manipulative nature and so on. So, they're completely sane in that sense.
I would like to ask, statistically, how many people in this room right now are likely to be psychopaths?
Okay, well, there's, I would say, 100 people in this room.
Thank you.
That's very nice of you, John.
Is there fewer than... No, there's not. No,
50?
50, okay. 50. So the statistic is 1 in 100 people is a psychopath, so...
But everyone knows probably one person that they think they're so ruthless and they're so charming and no one susses out what they're like.
I'm interested in what you just said about there being...
I was scared you're going to be like, you're the psychopath! I'm like, so much remorse.
Who on the panel, who out of the 5 of us is
who would be most psychopathic?
Michael.
Yeah! We get points,
right? Michael.
We get points.
Actually, genuinely felt disappointed for a second, and then I went, hang on, it does sound pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
We're going to give John some fictional scenarios, and you have to work out what he thinks is the right thing to do. So, John Ronson, you're walking along having a nice ice cream, you need it in this weather, when a man with a broken arm asks you to lift a sofa into the back of his van. How can you refuse? It's only an empty car park. But oh no, he clunks you on the head and puts you down a well because he's actually a psychopath and wants to eat you. What is the right way to dissuade a psychopath from killing you?
Oh, Michael. You have to say that your skin is really damaged for some reason and it wouldn't be any good when he makes the suit.
Psoriasis.
Is it by showing a level of love that is too great towards the person?
Ooh. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so if you're showing fear...
Like Patty Hearst.
To actually, to try and reverse the Stockholm syndrome back onto them.
Oh, interesting. Margaret, what would you do?
Oh, I mean, what do I know? I just tried to pick up the microphone and drink it. Move on.
What about if you turned to him? No, I'm going to eat you.
John, what's the actual answer?
Okay, if you're really being cornered by an approaching psychopath, I would advocate flattery. Because item one on the psychopath checklist, and there's a 20-point checklist, is grandiose sense of self-worth. One time I was interviewing a CEO called Al Dunlap, going through the psychopath checklist with him. Very successful CEO, asset stripper. When I got to grandiose sense of self-worth, we both looked up because he was standing underneath a giant oil painting of himself. So I would say flattery, pandering to their superiority, is something that would probably calm them down.
So you'd be like, oh, you've made this well, very foolproof.
So can I just ask quickly, when you were doing the psychopath test, did you actually, you know, have an advert in the press saying, are you a psychopath? Or did you go, are you a high flyer in business? I, John Ronson, the author, am very interested in business and high flyers. And then we've written a book about,
Well, I started off being much more honest than I ended up. In my early emails to people like Bernie Madoff, I said, can I come and interview you to find out if you're a psychopath? But then I discovered that none of them, you know, were writing back to me. So I did change tack after a while. I said, I believe it's possible that you might have a very special brain anomaly that makes you special. Can I come and interview you about your special brain anomaly?
And they were like, oh, I feel very flattered.
Yeah.
So here we've got another scenario. It's very exciting. For some convoluted reason, perhaps aliens or something, you need to create some psychos to fight a dirty war. You're given access to some clones of Jeremy Clarkson, but they have the mind of a child. What is the right way to create a psychopath?
Oh, I know this. The mother has to be, like, really brutal and, like, unloving, just give no love whatsoever, and then you've got to give them loads of animals and, like, make them torture the animals. I mean, it's weird that I know this, right?
Yeah.
But, like, make them torture animals, that's a thing that they do. And be a prostitute if you're their mum. Oh, and make sure they're really bad at, like, premature ejaculation.
Really bad at premature.
Sure, they're really bad.
How do you manage that as the mother?
Well, I'd be quite, like,
again,
oh.
That's part five, yeah.
So dark.
A bit informative.
What about the dad?
I don't know. I'm just thinking from my perspective if I was involved, because I wouldn't be the dad.
Michael, you'd be the dad. How would you create a psychopath?
That is how I'd create a psychopath.
You'd get
any woman that would have sex with me, if we ever had a child, that child will be a psychopath. There's no question about it, and I'd give it all the axes that a child needs.
Okay, a business psychopath, that's a really good retirement home for
you. It seems like a cop-out to me. I'm an old-fashioned psychopath kind of dad. And I want to raise my child properly as a psychopath.
How would you create a psychopath?
Well, most people who work with people who've been labelled psychopath would probably say that it's actually very difficult to create one, and really they're...
Stop putting all that effort. Yeah.
They're all nice and made their own T-shirts.
Well, and people are born that way, because what about all the psychopaths who had a perfectly nice upbringing? And so, yeah, it seems to be, for most people, a brain anomaly that you're born with and you die with, and you only stop being malevolent when you get too old and lazy to get up off the sofa. And in fact, most sort of career criminals give up around the age of 40 or 50, apparently, but most psychopathic ones just carry on till they can, you know, barely crawl out of the room to be malevolent. However, I'm sure that if you have a terrible, terrible childhood, like the one that you just described...
I was just talking about my own childhood.
I can't believe in that.
It's going to do something to your brain development. And you know, the nature-nurture thing is, as you know, complicated.
John, you did a fantastic TV series and book called Them, and you, amongst the players in that book, were David Icke and Ian Paisley.
Yeah.
either of those psychopaths?
Well, you know, I wasn't really interested about David Icke. I've been thinking a lot about David Icke lately, because David Icke believes a race of child-sacrificing, blood-drinking, paedophile lizards have adopted human form, and they're the ones who secretly rule the world. And the reason, the thing that I really made me laugh about that was you had people on the anti-racist left convinced that when David Icke said blood-drinking, child-sacrificing, paedophile lizards, he was using code, and what he really meant was Jews. And he said, no, really, I mean lizards. And they said, that's code too. But the reason why I've been thinking a lot about David Icke lately is that you've got eminent psychologists like Robert Hare and Martha Stout, like Harvard people, who are convinced that a kind of different species of human have kind of adopted human form to secretly rule the world, and they're psychopaths. So actually what Robert Hare believes is kind of really eerily similar to what David Icke believes, yet David Icke is considered loon and Robert Hare is eminent. I think that's kind of really interesting. But I don't think David Icke's a psychopath. And actually, I rather like Ian Paisley. I was talking to Michael actually about this. I like the fact that he watched our documentary, and even though it made fun of him, he kind of really liked it and laughed all the way through, and I've always sort of kind of admired...
Well, of course he laughed the whole way through, because he knows that you're going to burn for all eternity in hell.
He had a nickname for me, Ian Paisley. It was my circumcised friend.
If you want, I can knit you a foreskin.
Would you like to plug anything while you're here?
Yeah, you're not very successful.
Yeah.
But go on our podcast.
Go on about that goats thing if you want.
I mean, my book, The Psychopath Test, is currently in paperback. Can I plug that?
You can.
Would you plug our podcast on this podcast for us?
What are the scores, Producer Ben?
Michael and Robin have got 3, and Margaret and Jesse have got 4.
Round, we ask the panellists what is the wrongest thing to do in any situation. The winner will get to touch my coccyx. All right, then. The round will end when Ben blasts his horn. Okay, here goes. One of your shoes is on fire. What is the wrong thing to do?
Tell all young people it's the latest trend.
Feel sorry for the other shoe and set that on fire too.
You have 24 hours to save the world. What is the wrong thing to do?
Is it book a spa day? Fucking spa day.
I like a spa day.
You're an idiot.
A young person asks you why their parents have got divorced. What is the wrong thing to do?
Point at yourself.
It's the noise.
This guy?
Josie Long.
Tell them it's their fault and they can never remedy it. And that the best thing they could do would be to disappear.
They're only going to think that anyway.
You see a man in a wheelchair shoplifting. What is the wrong thing to do?
Is it stick a pepperami in the spokes? Doesn't mean anything.
Is it...
Is it to deliberately say, I'll help you in this shoplifting, and then fill his area where he's going to have to with running shoes?
No, that's worse.
That is pretty
fill
wrong.
His area.
Sorry, the round was, I believe, the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's disgusting. As opposed to, Robin, what would you do in that situation? For fuck's sake.
The show, we're all going to go home and think about what we've done. But before we do, Producer Ben, what are the scores?
The scores are Michael and Robin got 5, but Margaret and Jesse got 7! Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Well done to Margaret and Josie. That's the end. Goodbye!
If you like Do the Right Thing, you may also enjoy Mustard Comedy Magazine. Jam-packed with funny words and pictures, plus huge exclusive interviews with Michael Palin, Graham Linehan, Robin Ince, Stuart Lee, and many more, including guest contributors Alan Moore and Matt Berry. Brilliantly funny, says the BBC. Absolutely cracking, says Channel 4. A satirical gem, says the Telegraph. First class, says the Guardian. You get the idea. People like it. Mustard, as seen in the IT Crowd, if you look really closely. Get your mustard at mustardweb.org. Mustard is written in front of a live studio audience. Look, there they are. See? Mustardweb.org. Log it into your Interpod now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.